Welcome to The Feast Life, where we empower you, the modern homeschool mom, to create a life and homeschool you love, one founded on faith, family, freedom, and fun. I'm your host, Julie Ross, creator of the award-winning homeschool curriculum, A Gentle Feast, and a certified Christian life coach. For more information on today's episode and to access my free gift for you, check out thefeastlife.me. Charlotte Mason once said, life should be all living, not a mere tedious passing of time. So on this show, we seek to savor the feast of life. Girl, grab your favorite beverage and pull up a chair. You are welcome at this table. Are you ready to transform science from a dry list of facts into an inspiring journey of discovery for your homeschool? In today's episode of The Feast Life, I'm sitting down with Nicole Williams from Sabbath Mood Homeschool to uncover how you can bring the wonder of a Charlotte Mason education into science lessons. We'll dive into the power of living books, hands-on experiments, and foster a sense of curiosity that lasts a lifetime. Whether you're worried about covering key concepts or preparing your kids for future academic success, this conversation is packed with practical tips and fresh perspectives. Let's make science come alive together. So grab a notebook and get ready to be inspired in today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome to The Feast Life. I'm your host, Julie Ross, and I'm here today with Nicole Williams from Sabbath Mood. Good morning.
Hi there, good morning.
I'm so glad you're here. So today we're going to be diving into this topic that I feel can be apprehensive for a lot of homeschoolers, and that is the topic of science and how to approach this in a way that is life-giving, in a way that feeds not just your child with information, but feeds the heart, soul, and mind. And so you are the person I turn to for my curriculum, A Gentle Feast. I recommend people use your products because I think they're wonderful. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk to us about this.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited about this. I get very excited about science and I want other people to also.
Yes, it's definitely contagious. We definitely feel that. So just to give people a little bit of background information, like how did you even get started like writing these science guides?
Yeah, I did because I homeschooled my three children and also three and for a while, four of my adopted siblings. So for a while there I had seven kids in the house that I was homeschooling using Charlotte Mason's methods, but we were deferring to a big curriculum that just said to use a textbook. And so we were. And the kids that were my siblings, they were adopted at a later age. Like I think they were 9, 10, and 11 years old. And all that comes with that, bouncing around from school to school when they change foster homes, and they had figured out either how to work the system. One of them had, she was getting straight A's, but she wasn't really learning anything. She was just working the system. Yeah. And the other one that I have in mind, the others fall in between these two, but the other one was getting straight F's. And my dad said, you can't eat them. He has just figured out you cannot make him learn. Yeah. And so here I was using Charlotte Mason's curriculum and their eyes were opening. They were starting to get interested in things. They were starting to have conversations. I remember the first time we got a book from the library and the one who had been getting straight F's, when he just opened that book on his own because he wanted to know what was inside. And so here was this like warm, oh, it's working. It's reviving their heart for learning, except there was science and they were all failing every test and feeling really bad about themselves and hating the subject. And I thought, first of all, this is God's subject. This is his revelation to us. And if we hate it, we're doing something wrong. And so that's what made me start digging into what Charlotte Mason said about science and how we could actually do it so that it was a living subject. She says every subject has its living way. And I had to find the living way of this one. And thankfully, it wasn't that hard to do. It was hard work to put together all of the curriculum. But but her ideas often are rather simple once we get out of our own head and our own past experience to do it her way.
And I feel like with science, especially because it's like the humanities, living books, it's great for those kind of subjects like history and geography and civics, but like Science is hardcore facts. And so I need a
Yes.
textbook and I need to make sure my children are memorizing and they're learning all this information. And so I
Exactly.
see people go to that extreme of, I'll do Charlotte Mason for everything else. But for science, I need a textbook and we need to be doing these
Right.
experiments. Or
Right.
they're very much, we're doing Charlotte Mason. So for science, we're just going to read biographies about scientists and living books like
Right.
that. And they don't do any experiments. So it's like this, like two extremes here. Do you see that as well?
I absolutely do. I do. And I think that if you're going to err, and it is err on one of those two extreme sides, then the living biography is probably the better way to err because Charlotte Mason said that quote, she says, it's not how much they know, but how much they care.
Yes,
She was actually
absolutely.
talking about science in that
Really,
quote.
I
That
did
was,
not know that.
yes, she
Wow,
was.
okay.
So it is big. It's important that they care. But she also really felt like they needed to have a good science curriculum. On her day, it was when science was really taking off and it was going crazy. And so we always think, oh, Charlotte Mason, she's old-fashioned. She doesn't understand our STEM culture,
Yes, right.
But she actually lived in a time when that was the most important thing. And she said later it might be poetry or literature, but right now it's science. This is what's important to us. And little did she know it was still going to be
Yeah.
important to us 100 years later. But when I was working through the scheduling of her curriculum, I found that science was weighted so heavily. It takes up like 47% of her schedule,
Oh,
which is
wow.
more than any other subject. So she really did have a heart for this and mean for us to do the work
And when you're
involved in
saying
this.
science took up 47% of the schedule, are you also putting that broad category of not just science, but like nature study and natural history and stuff under there too? Or what are you including?
If it was included in the morning schedule, but
No.
primarily I'm talking about what I would call biology these days, but she called nature lore. That is not the act of going out and looking like nature study. That's the reading the
Yeah.
books towards that.
Okay.
And then your formal sciences and also geology, physical
Okay.
geology was
Okay.
part of that as well. Physical geography or geology. Yes.
Okay. I think I know what you're talking about. I'm like, because
Same.
that is, I was surprised to hear that. That is a big amount of time. So rather than those two extremes where it's either we just have to get the information and make sure they know these things, or we don't have time to do experiments, those kinds of things, we're just going to read some biographies. Explain what the middle looks like. What was
Yes.
Charlotte Mason actually saying we should be doing?
Absolutely. So the middle is still with the book. We still need a book, but what I call it is the spine text. And what that is an author who is passionate about this subject and they want to get everybody else as excited about it as they are. So one of my very favorites is Walter Lewin, who wrote For the Love of Physics, and I use it for high
Yes.
school physics. And
I
he's
actually
such a
understood
sweet.
physics for the first time in my entire
I know.
life, by the way, with that book, because like in high
Isn't that
school,
just
it
great?
was all just experiments and formulas and went all completely over my head.
Right over your head. And so many people, and this is just a great point, so many people, moms in particular, who are trying to choose which subject their kids are going to do, are afraid of physics because it's the way that they were taught or the way their friends were taught, and they avoided that. That was me. I skirted that class in high school. Like,
Oh, yeah.
I don't want. And I was like in advanced math classes, and I was still afraid of the math that was involved in physics. But physics is all around us every day. So Walter Lewin is like crazy fun, passionate about his subject. He just wants everybody else to get as excited about the subject as he is. So what he's written is a living book. It truly is a living book. He's a passionate author. He explains things well. And how Charlotte Mason says, it is the facts clothed with living ideas. So he does present a ton of facts in there, but he puts them in a living language. And so you've got your living book. That's important. Not just the biography, and not just original sources either. Some people go back to what's the candle one by Faraday? They what's
A
like,
history
okay,
of a
well,
candle?
that's it. Yes.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the original sources. We actually have some modern science we can work
Yeah.
with. So let's go with those. There's not a ton of them, but there's some really great
Yeah.
books available to us. And then she said that we must do experiments. And how that plays out is whatever the author is talking about in the book, we need to do an experiment that is related to that subject. So You know, if they're talking about light, we're going to do an experiment on light. We're not going to do an experiment on sound at that time. Yes, they're both waves, but let's do one that the kids are going to be asking about in their minds. That's the whole point of narration, is that we're asking questions. What happened next? What happened next? And Charlotte Mason said, we can only know what we ask questions of ourselves. That is a totally, but the point is, we have to ask questions of ourselves. And that's how we choose our experiments,
That's
is
what a scientist does, right? Scientists ask questions. That's part of research and understanding. And I get feedback sometimes from parents like, oh, I just get so frustrated because sometimes the experiments don't work. And I'm like, that's science.
That's true. Yes. And we get this like pass or fail
Yes,
thought in
it's
our head.
so ingrained in us, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. And really, I would say both math and science, we've got to lose that. And we have to go towards this, let's discover, let's see what we can figure out. What did we learn from this? And just change our mindset. But we were raised in a different system, most of us. Even parents who were homeschoolers, they were probably raised with doing school the traditional way. And so this is a really different thought.
And one of the other things I hear from parents is, okay, we're doing the spine techs, we love it, we're doing the experiments, but I'm worried, how do I know my child's actually getting what they need to know? Because I can't just give them a worksheet and they get 9 out of 10 right, and then I feel, oh yes, we have accomplished everything we need to for science.
This is where our exams come in and our notebooks, our science notebooks. And so, what's happening, and this is with every subject, but science in particular, I think of it like this process of information is coming in. It is clothed in living ideas, but there's still information coming in. And then the child does the work with that. Charlotte Mason says they have to do the work of their education. And so they grapple with those ideas. They pick ideas that are most important to them. They leave off other things. They assimilate stuff that they have learned in other places of their life, maybe experiences that they've had outside or other books that they've read. So that's that assimilation process. And then they have to verbalize it. And there's science behind this too. It's like passing from one side of the brain, the kind of intake side, and moving to the other side of the brain, which is the output side. And that crossing of the barrier, that middle section there, is what creates memory. So this is how our kids actually store the information. And so we have to have them after every single lesson verbalize, say, or put on paper, but it has to come out of them. What did they learn? What did they take away from this? So we have that practice going after every single lesson. And then at the end of let me stop before I go to exams. When we start a new lesson, we're practicing again by saying, what did we read last time? And we're pulling that forward. And that's just practice. And oh, can I get that? Can I recall that? And then at the end of the term, during the exams, we're asking them to pull it forward again. This recall is continuous through all of it. And hopefully, at the end of the term, they can say quite a bit about what they learned about particular things. And what I hear from families whose child goes on to college is twofold. One, that even if science is not their subject, like they're going to go get a literature major or something like that, they still love the subject. So, like, I heard from a parent recently whose son sent her a picture in his biology class through the microscope and just said, thank you for my science
Oh,
education.
that's awesome.
And so that's awesome. But then on the other side, I hear from parents that their kids can really enjoy the classes because they have enough of that core knowledge that they can really attach what that professor is saying to the things they know. They are adept at assimilating the information and then working with it. So a lot of them say that they and narrate to themselves when they go to the next class or something. So we're teaching our kids how to do the work of their education, which is so valuable.
I think what's so meaningful about this approach is it really develops like scientific thinking. So it's not so much like you're saying, like of the can you recite the definition of a mitochondria or something? Even though they will get that, that's important, but can they think scientifically and have that critical in-depth thinking? Because no matter what you do in life, that will carry you forward. But I do hear the common question of what if my science child wants to go into a science field? Is this going to be enough?
I think
Have you got
it's
that question too?
absolutely. I do too. I get it on the regular. And I think that's such a great question because, again, we're coming from where we've come from. And, right, you need AP science to get where you're going or whatever. But really, you don't. One of my favorite resources on this, and I highly encourage people to go listen to it, is Read Aloud Revival's episode. I think it's episode, it's either 8 or 9 where
Well, I'm
she.
surprised you remember the number. I will go look it up and put it in the
I
show
know.
notes. How's
Okay.
that?
Yeah. Put that in there for sure. Cause I would really encourage people to listen to this. This was a college professor who went to a liberal arts high school and chastised her parents because there was no AP class at her high school. And there was not really any good lab equipment and stuff. And she was like, this is not going to work. And then I love this little part of the story. She throws it in there. And then she went to Harvard as a freshman. And I'm thinking, obviously something was working for her. But she was in her first science classes, and she said that first week or two, those kids who had the AP science class, they knew enough that was like that skirted them upon. They had it. But she said after that first 2 weeks, they were equally sink or swim. The college classes moved so fast that really her liberal arts education was so much more beneficial to her. And she said that within a few weeks, kids were coming to her and asking her, how did you get an A on that lab? How did you do that test so well? And what it was is that she knew how to do the work of her education. And she had some big ideas to work with, that core field of knowledge in them. And so now she is a math professor, actually. So she
Oh, that's
didn't
so
end up
cool.
pursuing science, one of the STEM things. And I just love that. I think that we've got to keep in mind that one, our kids will change their mind. They will either become college science majors when we didn't expect it, or they will change and not be one when we thought we did. But I think the statistics are something like 50 something percent of our country works in a field that needs some kind of science,
Yeah, I
some
could
kind
totally
of
see that. Yeah.
anatomy or something. So
Especially medical stuff.
it is important stuff for them to learn, but it is more important for them to really get those foundational ideas. I talked one time to a professor at the Air Force Academy, and he was a professor of physics, and he took one of my classes, and he said, I would rather my students have a strong foundation of algebra than they have any calculus at all. I'll
Oh,
teach them
wow.
calculus, he said. And his point was that our kids fly through these subjects in order to
Yes,
get to
get
the
to the next
higher
level.
levels. Yeah, but they don't actually have that good solid foundation for those professors to work on. So I think we really are doing our kids a service by preparing them for any eventuality and then really a good quality education, good foundation
Yeah,
will
and I
be so
totally
beneficial.
could see that. Where Charlotte Mason is talking about like the idea of like ideas being pegs, and then later on you're going to add the facts to them. So I think they, not that they're not getting any facts, and people get that misunderstanding, but especially in high school where they're learning these scientific concepts in a way where they're being filled with the ideas and they're learning to question their thinking. Then when they do get to college and they have more fact-based information, that they conceptually can attach it to an idea and it makes it last even more in their minds than like someone like you're saying, like the AP kids that came out of traditional schools. I've learned to memorize stuff for a test, but I don't actually know how to process this stuff and understand it. And my daughter, I have to tell you this. So she did your science and she's now a senior. She's studying neuropsychology. And so she's taking neuro something 400. I don't even know what the class is. I couldn't understand what she was saying. And she called me the other day. She said, Mom, you would love this class so much. I was like, oh, can I come sit in? And she's, I don't know about that, but there's only 15 of us. And every week she assigns us a different scientific study to read. And then we come back to class and we talk about what we learned. And she's, it's just like sitting around the dining room table with you. And I was like,
Oh,
my God, thank you.
that is so awesome. And it brings up another really important component of science class, and that is the discussion. When you think about the number of things in science that have either changed over the
Oh
years
my
and been
gosh, yes.
thought about
Even
in
some of the books I
history?
include or you include that are like, people are like, that's different now. I'm like, yes, and talk to your kids about that. Stuff
Yes.
changes.
Yes, it absolutely does. And there's arguments about it, like people jailed because
Yeah,
they
right.
say,
Or
"Hey,
killed.
actually, I think we move around the sun, not the other way around." But you cannot read that stuff. And so that's where those biographies, that's a great thing for the kids to read because it does show them, they thought they knew what they were talking about. And oh, now I'm reading current events also, and I'm like, they think they know what they're talking about. I wonder if they actually do. So it really gives a different perspective. But those discussion questions, what do you think about this? What would you have done in this situation? Those kinds of questions create a humility in our kids because issues, scientific issues in particular, are complex.
Especially
They are
100%,
not simple.
yes.
Yeah, they do not have a good black and white, easy answer. And so grappling through those helps our kids to learn how to form opinions, which is really helpful, but also how to talk about those opinions with humility and grace. And don't we need more of that in our world, you
Amen,
know?
right now, yes.
Yeah. So in my guides, I try really hard to incorporate questions that are like big questions, no yes or no answers. Like, we really need to discuss this. And maybe we would think like this day, and in a couple years we're going to think differently. But also, I try to incorporate, like, from a Christian perspective, there's many Christians that don't think the same thing. There's your old earth Christians, your young earth Christians, and there's have been total six Christian theories of the origins of the earth. We need to be able to talk to other Christians.
Today's episode is brought to you by A Gentle Feast. A Gentle Feast offers a complete living books curriculum, an award-winning early reading program, and more tools to equip you to apply Charlotte Mason's timeless philosophy into your modern homeschool. Go to agentlefeast.com to check it out. Smooth and easy days are closer than you think.
With grace
Yes,
and humility,
100%.
too. And
Yep.
yeah, those discussion questions are so valuable.
And be able to not shy away from some books that might be different than what we are thinking. And I know you do a great
Yeah.
job of that in your curriculum of a kind of, and I get this question a lot, are all your science books Christian worldview, or what Christian worldview does it have, or like that stuff like that. And I linked to a blog post, and I can put this in the show notes too, that you share just about the benefits that can come from reading some books that we would say are quote unquote secular, because in Charlotte Mason's mind, there is no separation between sacred and secular, and this is God's world, this is God's subject. So, can you explain a little bit about your approach with that and how parents can maybe think about it different?
Yeah. So in form two, so form one doesn't have any formal science, but form two, so grades 4 through 6, they start their formal science, but they're still elementary students. And so if a book is talking about something like age of the earth, something like that, I just skip it because I think at this point that is for the family to discuss, for them to have that talking. That shouldn't come from the outside at that age. But starting in form three, so that's 7th grade, middle school, and on up, I do think that our kids need to be exposed to some of these things, not so that they would change their opinion. It's actually the opposite of that. Charlotte Mason says that when we say, "Here's what we think, here's what you think, child," end of story, and they hold us in high regard, and then they go off into the world, maybe to college, maybe not college, maybe a job. And they meet somebody else who they put in high regard in their minds, then they can quickly just change opinions because, oh, this person that I think is so smart, way smarter than mom who was just a homeschool teacher. You've talked about that before, and that's an important thing. We've got to keep learning. But still, you take somebody who is an Ivy League professor and they have an opinion, all of a sudden the child just transfers their allegiance to this other opinion. And so we do need to give them the ability to really be thinking about these things when they are in our home. And it's a hard thing. So what I do in the guides, It's hard on mom, I should say, not my kids.
Yeah.
What I do in the guides is that if they talk about geology, how the Grand Canyon was formed over a bazillion years, then I point them to read an article, maybe on Answers in Genesis, that says, here's how we think it was formed. And I do that all the way through, even including light years in later physics, astronomy. How do you explain light years from a young Earth perspective? There are four theories for how to explain, sorry, how to explain light years in from a Christian young Earth perspective. And you know what? Even if your family doesn't believe in the young Earth theory, I still think it's valuable for you to read that, or vice versa, to hear what other people are thinking and, you know, how they're thinking this through. So that's what I do. I try not to take any kind of a stance on thing. I will sometimes include Bible verses if I just feel there's a little bit of an agnostic tendency from the
Author,
author, and I want to say, hello, let's remember that our God created all of this. And so it's not that I have Bible verses on every page or anything. It's just that I'm coming from a perspective of God created all of it. He is more powerful than any being. And let's keep that in mind. How it happened, we can debate that and we can talk about that. But let's keep that in the forefront of our minds, of course. Yeah.
Yeah,
And then
100%.
what, and then just circling back to when I said it's hard on us parents. It's hard to hear our kids grapple with opinions about politics and life and God. But if they are doing that, and they are doing that in our home, then Charlotte Mason says they are more likely to recover our opinions. They are going to come back to what is that foundation that we had in the home. And I've seen that happen with my own kids. I have one in particular that we were like, what is happening right now? And she circled back. But then she circled back with the firmest foundation, and we can trust that and feel confident in that. So we've got to let the kids try to grapple with these ideas while they're still in our home.
Yeah, and it's great that they feel like we're a safe place where they can do that. That's what we want, because otherwise they're going to go find that with someone else. Consider it a privilege that they're grappling through it with you. Even though it's so hard to bite your
Exactly.
tongue sometimes and keeps you on your knees, it's a
It
blessing.
is. You feel like you swallowed a mouse. You're like, oh, okay. That's what you think. Okay.
100%. Okay, so let's get from more of this theoretical conversation down to the nitty-gritty of what I'm actually doing in my home on Monday. Okay, so you mentioned we have some sort of spine, we have some sort of living book, which is where the scientific concepts are clouded, or not clouded, encapsulated in a narrative kind of story, like living fashion. So we're reading those. What else do we need to be doing on a weekly or daily basis?
Really, the just the lesson has parts to it, and so we want to, what did you remember from before? Maybe prepare the lesson in a way by introducing it a bit, and I do all that for you if you use my study guides, is what happened before, and here's a little something, just grabbing their attention, because attention is so vital to this kind of an education, and then reading the book and narrating it. And then sometimes there are some other things that we can look up too. You mentioned sometimes there's things like the book might talk about Pluto being a planet, and it's not anymore. We don't consider that. So I sometimes include things that are like, okay, let's look into that further. Let's watch a video on that. Let's read an article about that. Something to maybe correct or clarify something in the text, or just like, I need to actually see this. One of the things I love is in the Form 2 machines guide, what's going through all of the different types of machines, simple machines. And then I include these videos of different things like robots, cars being created, just super fun things that I always tell people, if you use that, don't miss the videos. I call them optional, because I don't want anybody to be hung up by them if it's taking the whole lesson time to read the material and narrate. Don't spend a bunch of time on these other things. But if you have the time, those are great additions to a lesson. And then if the lesson lends itself to it, the discussion. And then what I kind of aim for is an experiment either each week or every other week. And In the lower grades, I usually include it every other week. Middle school has more. It's not the end of the world if you miss one of those, but it is really helpful to letting the kids really work through the material that they've been reading and bring it to life for themselves. So primarily, get ready on Monday is going to be make sure you have the equipment for that, because
Yeah, right.
that
That's
is
the biggest
the,
with me. That's always been the biggest hurdle. We go to do an experiment. I'm like, oh, we don't have Q-tips today. Or
Exactly. And as they get older, they're going to do the work themselves. Form three on, I write my guides to the students for them to do it themselves. If they can, they might need some overseeing by parents. But the main thing for us moms is to hold them accountable to make sure the work's being done, but also to get those supplies. That is our
yes.
job. Make sure that when the experiment's going to happen, I've got what I need.
Yes, it is nice when they're in high school, they could drive, and I'm like, okay, I need to go to the store and buy some soap. Forgot to get that. But
Exactly.
yes, you do want to be prepared. It'll make everything so much easier. And again, you're prepared, you're helping your child be successful. One of the other things you mentioned, though, are science notebooks. So how do you incorporate into all of the things you just mentioned?
Yeah, so the science notebook is basically where they're going to keep written narrations about science. And you can have one notebook that is for all the subjects. So Charlotte Mason actually had them doing four subjects every term. And we've done it that way in our home before. The kids actually liked it, where we did like biology on Monday, chemistry on Tuesday, physics Wednesday, and moved through them that way. But then they would incorporate any one of those narrations into that science notebook. So you don't need to have a different one for every subject. And this would be written narrations, but also one of the best parts about this is diagrams. So if there is a diagram in the book, just reproducing that in the notebook or drawing something you saw during an experiment, it really gives life to those notebooks and makes them so neat. Some of the kids, it's in pencil, it's really scratched out, but they're still proud of them. They're really proud of them. I had one time a student send me several of his notebook pages. His handwriting was really rough. His sketches that he made were really rough too. Everything was in pencil, but he was proud of him. That was his like grouping of what he had learned. And then I have other students who I can one I'm picturing in my mind was they were learning about a nebula in the planets, which is middle school astronomy, and she had drawn with watercolor this beautiful multicolored nebula. And so the kids are going to come at it from different perspectives, but in a way, it's like their nature notebook where they should have ownership of that, what it looks like, what they put in there, what they don't put in there. But you want them to be putting something in there. That's your accountability factor is what have you put something in there? Yes, okay. But then how it turns out in the end is a piece of art, or I guess that maybe would be like, I don't want kids or parents to think that it should be artistic. I don't want that idea to come across, but just the uniqueness of each of them. That's what I'd like people to understand. So, something I think that a hardbound sketchbook that's a 8.5 by 11, a larger size is really good for this. Excuse me. Sometimes we're looking for what about the lines? How do I write neatly? My trick for that is just take a piece of binder paper and a ruler and a black permanent marker and make those lines on the binder paper dark. And then you slide it in behind that sketchbook paper and you can see it through the paper.
That's a great
And
idea.
that way the student can be tidier in their writing and not feel like they're being messy if that's important to them.
Now, I can't remember if this was you or this was just something I incorporated. Like in the high school, do you have them start doing like lab reports or the lab kind of framework in their notebooks, or is that something different, or do you not do that? And I just made that up.
I usually have them do it in their notebook, but I do
Okay.
have an article about that, that if you know your student is planning on a science field and they want to start that as a
Yeah.
freshman at an important college, then you may need to keep a separate lab notebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I had my daughter start that, but she had it in her regular science notebook, but it was like learning the process. And she, of course, made it all artistic and her diagrams were all flowery
Yeah.
calligraphy and all that. But I really
As
do feel like that helped because as soon as she got to college, she was writing lab reports, but she was like, I already know how to do this. I know my
Right.
hypothesis and my procedure. And my, like, she knew how to do it from what we were doing at home, but I couldn't remember if that was something I brought in or that was in your guides as well.
Yeah, I have a link that talks about how to
Okay.
prepare those in just an article on my website. So that would be useful. And really, when you think about it, okay, the reason to have a separate lab notebook is so that if you are applying to a college that wants to see that they can, how much more valuable would it be if they were looking through and you just had narration after narration and diagrams and all this stuff? And oh, and there's one of my labs, and they are moving through. So I think that while I guess formally it should be separate, I think for our purposes, which would be applying to college, it's still valuable just to have it in the science notebook.
Absolutely. And it gives the kids, again, the kids are having that ownership of it, which can be so hard to like release because we want it to look all pretty. We want to put it on Instagram and we want all the things. And it's that might not be what it looks like, but let them have their ownership of it. But also, it's a process too. So, like when they're younger, are you having them write in their science notebook every day, week? How are you doing it?
Not until form three. In form two, I think it can be oral. If you have someplace you're keeping written narrations and you want to do a written narration, because you do fewer at that age. So if you wanted to, and you could do them with your regular written narrations. But starting in form three, they should be keeping that science notebook. And really, unless they do an oral narration that day, like they need to do one or the other is my point. And if it's not going to be an oral narration, it should be written in that notebook. And in the guide, I do often say record or reproduce the diagram that's on page 67 or something, trying to prompt them to do things like that.
Yeah,
And
that's
keep
really
in
good.
mind too that if your students are not writing well or they're not as comfortable, they can always write some of the stuff. Like maybe they draw a diagram and they write a few notes about what they learned, and then they can tell you the rest of it. So we can be flexible about this too.
Yes, and I think that's a really great point. So thank you so much for your time. This has been really helpful. I hope it gives parents the courage to start to think about approaching science differently. So do you have any final words to the parent who is, this sounds really nice, this sounds really interesting, but it's a little overwhelming and I'm not used to it and it feels really uncomfortable?
Sure. So, what I have found, all my kids have graduated now, but what I started saying towards the end is when it's really hard, we're just complicating it. Charlotte Mason's methods are actually really simple for individual subjects, I say. It seems like a lot to be navigating all of those subjects, but the individual subject should be a simple thing. And so, if it really is overwhelming, I would look at how are you doing it? Are you really following the way she meant to do it? And number two, how much are you bringing baggage from your school education forward and trying as much as you can to just release that and try to have fun with this? Because our world is beautiful and crazy awesome. And the laws of science, they were created by our Lord. So when we study them and how unique and interesting they are, we need to remember this isn't just something somebody's trying to do to you to punish you to learn Newton's laws or whatever, that this is us making discoveries that are applicable all the way around our universe and right in our front yard and with our younger children playing and things like that. Try to have fun with that. If you're hating the book, it's probably not a living book. So that's something else to keep in mind. Make sure that you use a living book. It's really important. They have great stuff in there. And then maybe getting out of that idea of like, how can we perform again? And just really looking at how much do we care? How interested is this subject? And then one last thing is just often the things that we our fears that we bring to the table, our kids don't have a fear about that until we like put that on them. And so if you can just hold that to yourself, or maybe say, I'm not as comfortable with this subject, or I think you need to lead this, son, because I'm not sure what to do. And just entering into that with our kids and letting them be interested for their own sake, because we don't know what things are going to take off in our kids' life. And so holding that back until you get the spark too as you go along, because usually that's what happens. If people start doing a living science curriculum, they're like, how do I make my kids? How do I get my kids? How do I force them forward? And I'm like, just hold off a minute, read the book, do the thing, and see what happens. And usually what happens is the momentum is built just by that living book and it takes off for all of you.
It's more of an allowing than like a forcing. And I thought what you said is so key, and I could totally see this in my own life. Like the baggage that we're bringing might not necessarily be something that our kids are struggling with. And I think a lot of us, like for me, I was like in these advanced science classes where it was like precious. And there was no wonder. And I think that's what's so beautiful about this approach. It's we're allowing children's a natural ability to be curious and to wonder about the earth and God's creation and ask questions and then try to find answers to those questions. And that's an innate characteristic that God put inside of us, but we squash it with, here's the right answer, here's how you do this, and you need to perform. And this approach opens the door to wonder, not just for our kids, but if you start to wonder for yourself, then it's exciting and that catches on and they see that within you as well. And it takes the pressure off. And I think that's a key because we feel like I couldn't homeschool my kids for these subjects because I don't remember anything from physics class or I didn't do well in biology. But it's no, you don't have to be the fountainhead of all knowledge and you don't have to know everything. You don't have to answer all these questions on a nature walk. You can just ask questions too. And I like what you said about approaching it from a place of humility of, I don't know. What do you think? Or I don't know. Maybe we could try to find an answer together. And it's like this whole just shift from teacher being the expert to teacher being the guide.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And
So,
just finding
oh,
the
go ahead.
joy in that.
Yes, 100%. And your guides make it so easy to do. So we're definitely going to link to those in the show notes, but how can everyone else find you and what you have?
Absolutely. So Sabbath Mood Homeschool is my website. Same thing on Instagram. I have a blog and a newsletter, and I did prepare a checklist for you, for your listeners, if they would like
Yay.
to check that out.
Okay.
That would be just sabbathmoodhomeschool.com/JF for gentle feast.
JF or GF?
GF,
GF.
don't
Okay. I
worry.
was like,
GF. Shall we have another conversation about
oh, girl,
dyslexia?
we already had that one. Remember, you're on my podcast. I'll link to
That's
that one
right.
in the show notes too. That was like from 3 years ago. So I'm going
Oh
to
yeah,
link
that's been a
to.
while ago.
I know, crazy. I will link to that episode on dyslexia because that was such a great conversation and something we both have experience with. Thank you so much for
Absolutely.
the time to come on today and talk to us. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yes, we will link to all those things. So thanks again. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Let's wrap up with some key takeaways. First of all, you can use living books in science. Rather than textbooks, using living books written by authors who are passionate about the subject helps children engage deeply and retain information. You need to use a balanced approach. Charlotte Mason's science approach strikes a balance between factual learning and fostering a genuine interest in scientific subjects through regular experiments and hands-on experiments that are tied to the readings your child can develop scientific thinking. Scientific thinking instead of focusing solely on memorization. This helps develop critical thinking and inquiry skills that are valuable for any career. Number three, keeping a science notebook. These are personalized records where students capture their learning through notes, diagrams, and reflections. Each student's notebook is unique, encouraging ownership and artistic expression. And then last but not least, remember, parents are guides. Rather than needing to have all the answers, parents can model curiosity and wonder, making science an enjoyable exploration of God's creation. Make sure to check out the show notes for today's episode to find links to Sabbath Mood Homeschool and all that they have to offer. Thanks for listening. Ross here. I just wanted to say thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like this show, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a positive review in iTunes. This really does help people learn about the podcast. And each month, I will pick a winner to receive a free gift. Don't forget to check out all the free resources we created for you at thefeastlife.me. Thank you.